Somewhere across the bifrost, way up.
Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. Thank you as always so much for the listen. We really do appreciate it. And joining me as always is Pat Dunford from Across the Pond. Pat, how are you holding up?
I'm doing really well, thank you, TT. How are you?
I'm doing splendid, thank you for asking. And I'm excited. AMG has given us a lot of content. We've got a couple box reviews, like box review after box review. And today we're taking a look at Taskmaster and Punisher. Do you have any hot takes before we dive in, Pat?
Yeah, they're a really cool box. One of three that has come out this month. So they're keeping us really busy, like you said. I'm excited to talk about them. They've got kind of a skull theme going on between the two. And these are characters that I think are going to be popular in a lot of teams. So they're well worth the discussion.
Yeah, I didn't even think of the skull theme. Very Halloween appropriate, I suppose. So if you don't mind, let's go ahead and start with Taskmaster. And where do you think we should start with him, Pat?
So let's do the rundown, as we always do. Let's cover his stats. So top of his card, he's got 6 stamina on his healthy side, 5 on injured, so 11 in total. And that is the only difference between his healthy and injured sides. He is a medium mover, size 2 and 3 threat, so nothing remarkable there. And speaking of unremarkable, his defenses are 3 physical, 3 energy, and 3 mystic. Now, he's got 3 melee attacks. Say melee attacks. 3 attacks. The first is Sword Strike. It's physical. It's exactly the same as Baron Zemo. And I want to call that out because they mentioned in the Atomic Mass Transmission that he has that attack. It's part of Taskmaster's stick, right? That he teaches other heroes and mimics their abilities. So it's intentional that his sword attack is exactly the same as Baron Zemo's. Range 2, 5 dice, physical, causing bleed and generating power equal to damage. And then his next attack, shield throw, is identical to Captain America's, right? For the same reason, which I think is really cool. Range 4, power 4, free to use, ignores line of sight and cover, and has a wild ricochet effect. So we know these attacks. We know they're both fine, solid. And then his third attack, his spender, is his mnemonic technique. Range 2, 4 power, cost 2. Add dice to the attack roll equal to the target's physical defense. The target character cannot modify or reroll dice in the defense roll during this attack. So this, against a three defense physical defender, this is going to be range 2, 7 dice for 2 power that doesn't let the opponent reroll or modify. That is a really efficient attack.
Yeah, I really like his attack suite, and I guess we could focus on mnemonic technique. I think that's a really cool builder. I love that it's a cheap builder. He shouldn't have any problems using it multiple times over the course of the game. I think it's really cute at having the quote-unquote venom effect, right, where they can't modify or reroll dice. And then on top of that, you know, the additional dice equal to the character's defending. And to most characters, right, you're going to come out ahead if you're adding attack dice equal to defense dice. So I really like it. I think he's got a great attack suite. Shield throw is a great toss-in. I know people kind of blip over that on Captain America, but just having the ability to make a longer range attack can often be very beneficial if you're trying to hold something, or if you honestly just can't move up to get within range too.
Yeah, for sure. It's probably the attack he's only going to use when he has to, but when he has to, you're going to be really glad you got it. So his superpowers. His first is his photographic reflexes. This is a 2-cost reactive power. After an attack targeting this character is resolved, this character may use the superpower. If the attacker is within 3, you roll 4 dice and you deal 1 damage for every wild or crit. If the attacker has already targeted this character with an attack this turn, you roll 6 dice instead of 4. So this is a juiced up Counter-Strike power. So similar to Black Widow or Baron Zemo from the core set, this is a better version of those abilities. Then we've got Intuitive Pattern Recognition. This is kind of like his signature move, and it combos really well with photographic reflexes. If an enemy character targets this character with an attack and has already targeted this character with an attack this turn, add 2 dice to the defense roll. So when you attack him for the second time in a turn, his defenses go to 5-5-5, which is really solid. He pairs that with Martial Artist. So if he's within range 2, he gets to count blanks when defending against physical or energy attacks. And you can see that these three abilities combine to make him very, very resilient. Last but not least, he's got Rogue Agent, just like Winter Soldier. One character with Rogue Agent counts as an affiliated character during squad building. So TT, what do you make of this guy?
I really like him. He's just a nice, flexible 3-threat character. I like his attack suite. In the beginning, we kind of said, like, he's got middle of the line defensive stats. I think that's pretty accurate, right? 11 total stamina, 3-3-3 coming in at 3 threat. Maybe one stamina above the curve. But with, when you add in all of his superpowers, he's actually, like, shockingly durable, right?
Yeah, very durable. He starts to become in the conversation for one of the more durable 3 threat characters. He's one, though, that has a bit of a bit more counterplay or finesse to him, so to say, right? Because his durability isn't just purely in his stats. It's not like he's Groot with 14 stamina or Drax with his invulnerability. His martial artist can be incredible, but it can do nothing. And intuitive pattern recognition will dissuade you from attacking him twice a turn, but if you're only attacking him once, it does nothing for his survivability, right? So he's a character that situationally is really hyper-resilient, but you can play around that, right? You want to try and put him in the situations where he's going to shine.
Yeah, but I think there's lots of opportunities for this character to shine, right? I don't think he's as corner case as Groot, who you mentioned before, who needs a very unique scenario in order to kind of excel. I really like Taskmaster. I know he's part of Criminal Syndicate. Does he have another affiliation tag on him, Pat? I don't remember.
No, he's just Criminal Syndicate, but of course he's also a rogue agent. So he can turn up in a lot of places.
So on Taskmaster's card, Photographic Reflexes doesn't quite make sense to me. Pat, did Atomic Mass Games say anything about this superpower?
Yeah, so they have clarified it. There's a couple of mistakes, unfortunately, on Taskmaster's card for this power. The first is that it's labeled as an active power, but it is supposed to be a reactive power, which you can tell from reading the text when it reacts, and active just doesn't make any sense for it. The second is that, as written, because it looks at whether or not you've been targeted by an attack, the first time you use it, you would get 6 dice. That's obviously not the intention. So that's also being clarified. The first time you're attacked in a turn, you get 4 dice. The second time, you get 6.
That makes a ton more sense. Thanks for clearing that up. And I'm sure Atomic Mass Games will put that out on their website. Be sure to check that out with all the FAQ to stay up to date. Yeah, so I really like him. I think he'll be a pretty popular character, and I really like the mnemonic technique. What do you think of that builder or that spender?
Yeah, I think it's really, really good. I think it works out as being a very efficient spender, because I think it's reasonable to expect that you're going to be rolling about 7 dice against somebody. It's worth noting that because it keys off physical defense, it's never getting particularly better than 7 dice, right? Or particularly worse. In the sense, if you're hitting Rocket, he's got 1 less dice, but then so do you, right? If you're hitting a 4 physical defense character, you've got 1 more dice and so do they. So it doesn't get massively better by targeting someone with higher physical defense. It's maybe just a tiny little bit better. But its default case, or its most common case, of being 7 dice for 2 power is a pretty cheap way to do a 7 dice attack. One of the things I've found with his play pattern, he's a short range character. His best attacks are range 2, and he's got martial artists, so he's heavily incentivized to get close. But he doesn't have a charge, so it's quite common I've found for his turn 2 to be advance and then mnemonic technique with the power that he's built up from turns 1 and 2. And he can start throwing out decent damage early, but it's by no means explosive, right? It's kind of respectable, and then he's falling back on his high survivability to keep him in the fight.
Yeah, other things, I guess on mnemonic technique, I mean, your ideal target is someone who's doing prophecy, right? And then things like incinerate or other things where they lose defense dice, that's another way you can get a little bit of an advantage. But again, it's nothing crazy there. I wouldn't try to build a team around it. I think what you bring up about the lack of charge is something important, right? And we always kind of mention that. And shield throw is a poor replacement for a charge, right? It does give you that little bit of extra reach, but he is going to have to move. He doesn't have any way to move opponents' characters, right? No push, no throw, nothing like that. So keep that in mind when you're taking him. He's just a singular beat stick, right? He's a slower... I'm going to compare him to Zemo, right? He's a much slower Zemo, right? No charge and that short move, but he makes up for it for being more durable. Right?
Yeah, slower and tougher, for sure. I think if I'm going to be critical of him, I think what you mentioned, the fact he can't move people around is his biggest detriment, because he's so good at surviving. What he really wants to be doing is sitting on a point and fighting over it. But he's not necessarily going to be very good at actually taking out his opponent. On the other hand, he's resilient and he's quite flexible and he's quite cheap and he can be quite problematic to deal with for his cost.
Yeah, the last thing I want to say about him in my short test games with him is if he gets a lot of power, he actually kind of struggles to dump them all out, right? He can only make two mnemonic techniques. They're range two, so your opponent just simply moves away from you. Photographic reflexes is obviously a great power, but it does require your opponent in order to kind of set up the trigger condition for it. So keep that in mind. He's one of those characters that once he gets going, he might be able to fuel some of your general tactics cards. Because for me, at least, he had a hard time dumping out his power stack.
So I think that's a really, really good point. I just wanted to reemphasize it because I think you're completely correct. If you look at his card, he's only got two ways of spending power, right? And they both cost two, mnemonic technique and photographic reflexes. So if you're not using those abilities, you're really doing nothing at all with your power. I think my takeaway from what you've just said is to use photographic reflexes early and often, right? Because the opportunity cost for using it is super low. If Taskmaster has any amount of power at all, he should probably just be using it to do extra damage that way, because the only way that he's shifting enemy characters is by dazing and carrying them, and he needs to get ahead of that.
No, I definitely can't agree with that more. So, Pat, is there anything else you want to talk about Taskmaster? I think we both like him as a more durable, slightly more limited version of Baron Zemo, right?
Yeah, and I think you can't escape without comparing him a bit to Winter Soldier, just by virtue of the fact that they're both rogue agents. I like that he is the tough, close-range rogue agent, and Winter Soldier is a bit more maneuverable, longer-range rogue agent.
Yeah, and again, we'll talk about this a little more in the after-the-credit scene. For everyone who don't know, Patreons get a small 15 to 20-minute bonus episode every week where we kind of explore what the second rogue agent really opens up for us. But I think in general, Taskmaster is a welcome addition to the MCP family. I think he's really cool. I'm excited to paint mine. I haven't picked mine up yet. My local game store just got him in stock as we're recording this podcast.
I am painting mine as we speak.
Wow. Wow. And you can check out Pat's painting on the Discord. But next up, we have Mr. Frank Castle, highly anticipated. I am not a Punisher fanboy, but I understand that a large contingent of the world is, and I am happy that their character is being released. So what do we think about the Punisher, Pat?
Yeah, Punisher has a lot of hype surrounding him, and I understand why. He is really cool. He's had a lot of cool comics. So looking at his stats, like Taskmaster, the top of his card is in fact identical. He's got 6 stamina on his healthy side, 5 on his injured. He is a medium mover, size 2, 3 threat, with 3-3-3 for his defenses. That's pretty much where the similarities end. He has 2 attacks. his first is hip fire, and this is essentially the same as Agent Widow's pistols. It is a range 3, 4 dice physical attack. It gives 1 power after the attack is resolved, and it has rapid fire. After the attack is resolved, you can make a second attack against the same target. So we know that this does decent damage and decent power generation. Then we've got Aimshot, which is a terrifying spender. It is a range 5 sniper rifle with 7 dice for 3 power. It's physical. It has Wild Pierce, and if it deals damage, then the target suffers stun and slow. So that is a serious attack.
Yeah, it's an interesting combination. Hip fire, like you said, is basically what Widow has. And when that does damage, it's great, but really I just like it for 2 power generation. Mm-hmm. Aim shot is really, really cool. I love a lot of things about it. It has a very, very relevant wild in Pierce. And then in addition, if you are able to squeak that 1 damage through, which odds are you should be able to, right? The stun and the slow are fantastic conditions, especially when you factor in you're able to slow things at range 5. That's very powerful. I've done that with Hawkeye multiple times. I'm sure you have too, Pat. It's a wonderful condition to be able to toss out at that range.
Yeah, really, really good. And I think we'll talk about it maybe a little more after we've read the whole card, but it immediately gets me thinking about where Punisher is going to shine and what kind of teams he's going to work in. So looking at his superpowers, his first active power is No More Second Chances. This lets him discard punishment tokens, which we'll hear about in a second, in order to get additional dice on his attack rolls. So he discards between 1 and 3 tokens, and he gets that many extra dice on his attack. He can do this once a turn. It's more or less the same as Hela's ability to spend souls for damage, if you're familiar with that. His next abilities, Spec Ops training, an active power for 2, lets him advance short and can be used once a turn. Nice bit of mobility. And then Warzone, a active power for 3. This one is an action, very importantly. And it lets you choose an interactive terrain feature of size 3 or less within 4 of this character. Enemy characters within range 1 of the terrain feature suffer 2 damage. The terrain feature is destroyed and removed from the battlefield. This superpower can be used only once per turn. And then finally, we've got his innate power, the Fallen. When another allied character is dazed or KO'd by an enemy effect, this character gains a punishment token. This character may have a maximum of 3 punishment tokens at a time. So, similar to Hela again, the difference here being that he collects them only when allied characters are dazed or KO'd, compared to Hela, who cares about anyone being dazed or KO'd. So, TT, what do you make of all this?
There's a lot going on. There's a lot on this card.
A lot.
So let's start with the Punisher tokens, if that's okay. His little mini game. What do we think about them? I don't think it's worth building around. Like, I don't think I'm particularly going to go wide in order to try to leverage them. But I think it's more just a nice thing to have, and kind of later in the game, it can definitely provide you with a little more oomph in that aim shot.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a nice to have. You could argue that he gets a little bit better in those wide teams, but I think it's by such a small amount that it's negligible. I think if we assume you're playing a game where you're trying hard not to let your own characters be tased and KO'd, you're not going to have a lot of these tokens over the course of a game, and they're not necessarily going to be when you want them. But his attacks are good enough that any number of these tokens is just an awesome extra bonus, right? And especially on aimshot, he has the range to apply this damage wherever he wants on the table, and it can help ensure that you trigger the stun and slow condition on that attack.
Yeah, so I think they're useful. Like we said, nice to have. I'm not going to rush to put every 2 and 3 threat character on a list with Frank Castle to utilize it. But if I already had a wide teams, like a Sooner Fives Guardians team or something, I would definitely consider rotating Punisher in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I think he does really well in that kind of Guardians damage focus team.
Let's talk about Spec Ops training last, because Warzone's kind of a mouthful for me. So Spec Ops just seems like a nice thing. It just gives him the ability to move, another power dump. Hipfire is actually a really great way to generate power if you're able to get people in range. But I like Spec Ops. It's not amazing, but it's certainly not bad.
I think it's pretty great because it's essentially an extra action, right? Think of it like a charge. It's only a short move instead of his would be a medium if he had charge, right? But it isn't forcing you to then follow it with an attack. The same, compare it to hit and run. It's a shorter move, but it isn't forcing you to attack first. It's like a more flexible version of these abilities, the downside being that you don't move quite as far. But if you consider that he has good range on his attacks, I think you're going to find this is really, really helpful. I think you're going to have turns where you spec ops into range, hip fire, and then aim shot, and you're going to feel like that was an excellent turn. And you're going to have other turns where you need to do something like move, hip fire to generate power, and then spec ops again, right? And you're going to find that he is surprisingly mobile while he's going around the table. I think this power is really good.
I think the power is really good. My issue in my limited games with Punisher is that there's a lot of different ways I want to use his power. So I didn't always feel like I had the power to do everything I wanted, which is great, right? It's great when a character has these dynamic choices. And for me, it just came back to like, I wanted to take as many aim shots as I possibly could. But again, yeah, Spec Ops certainly isn't bad, right? I mean, you can look at it as a slightly worse hook shot that Hawkeye has, right? And Hawkeye puts that to great use.
Yes, I think you're right. The biggest challenge with Punisher is he's really good at spending power. And you do have to choose because your power income is limited by the set amount on hipfire. You have to choose how you're going to spend it. I like, though, that it enables him to have some really spectacular turns if he does have a lot of power. You know, when he's got that classic turn coming up from having been dazed the turn before, he can really go nuts with his power.
Yeah, he can definitely do that. He's where Taskmaster has a problem dumping his power, Frank Castle certainly does not. The last superpower is Warzone. I'm a little conflicted on this one. Pat, what do you think about Warzone?
So my experience with Warzone so far, seeing people discuss it, is people say, oh my gosh, this is the best power I've ever seen. This is like a much better throw. I'm going to use this all the time. And then they realize it's an action, and they say, oh, never mind. And I think both sides of that may be a little bit off, a little bit too extreme. I think it's very strong, but it's situational. I think it's comparable to the damage you would get from throwing a piece of terrain. Having an exact 2 damage is really interesting, right? Because any time where you can do a reliable number of damage without rolling dice, that's appealing, and it lets you make some consistent plays. On the other hand, 2 damage on its own is not going to put off any character, so you need to be pairing it with other attacks. I just think because of the long range, I think it has a place for sure. And I think it's really interesting that it is a way to blow up cover, right? And the fact that it punishes people for being within range 1 of terrain, and you have to be within range 1 of terrain to get cover. I think you'll have times where you're really, really happy to have this ability, and it will be more appealing to remove their cover and do 2 damage to them than it will be to make an aim shot for the same price. Bear in mind, cover is really detrimental to hip fire because you're making 2 small attacks that get to count cover twice. Cover is a little bit detrimental to aim shot just because you want to be sure to do the damage. So I think this option on him is great. But as you mentioned before, he's got no shortage of ways to spend his power, and competing with aim shot is difficult.
Yeah, and you kind of summed it up for me. I like Warzone. It being an action is a big, I'm going to say negative, for lack of a better word, impediment to it. But I like it. I'm not a huge fan of flat damage. That's just like a personal thing. That's obviously, like, you know, I have a lot of opinions and not always right. It's definitely an interesting superpower. It's one I wasn't expecting. But I do like the fact that he has a way to interact with terrain. Otherwise, right, he's suffering from the same thing we talked about Taskmaster, right? He has no way to interact with you other than, you know, punching you in the face, shooting you in the face, slashing you with a sword. Punisher at least has a way to kind of increase that, right, by blowing up some terrain and doing some interesting ambient damage. So, I like it. I'm just kind of conflicted on it. And for me personally, I haven't used it a lot in games because mainly, again, I was trying to just do as many aim shots as possible. So definitely needs more testing for me.
Yeah, I think there'll be moments where it's incredible, right? But I also understand that it's not something you're going to necessarily build your whole plan around. Bear in mind, it does hit multiple targets, and maybe you can construct some sort of dream scenario where you move a bunch of people into terrain. Right? Maybe you throw a bunch of characters into a big piece of size 3 terrain in the middle of the table. They all take damage from the collision, and then you blow it up, and you get to live that dream. That would be pretty cool.
It would be cool. You let me know how that goes for you, Pat. I don't think I'm going to try it.
That's fair.
So to wrap up, I think Punisher is really cool. And then Punisher is another only physical attacker. So both of these boxes today were only physical damage dealers, which we'll get into in a future episode. But I like the Punisher. I personally think I'm going to be playing Taskmaster a little bit more. But what do you think about Punisher, Pat? Is he fitting into any of your rosters immediately?
So I think rosters is exactly the conversation to have with him. So one thing to note, he is unaffiliated, right? AMG updated the affiliation document and they added an unaffiliated section where he lives. So he needs to be getting into rosters on his own merits, not just to make your affiliated numbers work. We already mentioned that we think he'd be a good fit in Guardians of the Galaxy. If they're doing a team of lots of cheap characters that do a lot of damage. He is a 3-cost character that hits very, very hard. Another roster idea that I think is worth considering with him is the rosters we've discussed on this show in the past in regards to Black Widow, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., right? We have talked at length about her combo potential with her pistols and various damage increasing abilities such as Doom, Prophecy, Blind Obsession. And this is another character that has that option. And I think that's very interesting. You might decide that Black Widow is better for it. You might decide that Punisher is better for it. Or you might decide that you want to have some redundancy if your plan is to nuke people with Doom Prophecy and you want to take both characters, one on either side of the table, and ensure that your plan is going to work somewhere.
Yeah, it's interesting. He loses one die. Obviously, Widow's that 4 defense. He's only that 3 defense, but he has built-in Spec Ops training, right? And a lot of times with Widow, you're forced to take Avengers Assemble to give her that move in the middle to give you additional targets. Punisher doesn't really have that problem. And the Punisher can obviously just reach out and hit someone for 10 damage with aim shot, which is certainly no joke. So I do really like him. It'll be interesting where he kind of slots into rosters as an unaffiliated. I don't really have a prediction for it. I'm kind of curious where he ends up.
Yeah, the last place that I'm personally thinking about putting him, I shouldn't say last because that implies I'm not going to put him there. The final place that I was thinking about putting him in was Cabal, just because we mentioned he is really good at spending power, right? And his attacks are good at generating extra power with Cabal leadership, right? Hipfire gives you 2 chances to get extra power. Aimshot is very reliably going to refund your power. So I expect that in Cabal, he will do a lot of damage and be able to unleash a very large amount of his kit every turn. And he could be this damage-dealing 3-cost character that a lot of Cabal teams want.
No, that's definitely a good include. I much maligned, but I actually think he makes really good use out of the winging it tokens. If you're able to get tokens on him, like Pat says, he can put a lot of attacks out around, definitely get some value out of that token. So, and he kind of synergizes because Guardians fall over sometimes. So I think we both like Punisher, and I think it'll be interesting to see where he lands.
Yeah, agreed.
So there are some pretty interesting cards that come in this box. Is there one you want to start with us, Pat?
So look, we just talked about Punisher. Let's talk about his character-specific card, Blood Red and Personal. Super cool art, super cool theme. This card is unaffiliated reactive. During the power phase, an allied Punisher may spend 4 power to play this card. Each time an enemy character is KO'd this round, this character's controlling player gains 1 victory point. So, I don't know about you, TT, but I really like cards that give me victory points. That's how I win the game. Do you like this one?
I am a fan of cards that give you victory points. I don't know if I like this one. I think I do. In my very limited testing, it was good. I like that it stacks with other things that give you VPs. We already mentioned like a soft synergy with Agent Widow. She can pick you up VPs for dazing people. Obviously, Thanos has some synergy here with his healthy side. And then Killmonger being the other one, right? With Usurp the Throne. I don't know. I like it. I mean, when I put this into my roster, when I did a lot of thinking about this, I basically counted on this card to get me a single VP. I think counting on it to get you any more than that seems optimistic. What is your assessment there?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be very difficult to be in a game where you are, where it's close enough that you need the victory points, right? A game you're not already stomping, where you can accurately predict in the power phase that you're going to KO more than one enemy character, right? Because I've heard this card be criticized as being a win more card, as in it helps you the most when you're already winning. And that is true to some extent, right? Being able to play this and go, I'm definitely KOing 3 characters this turn, so this card is great. It's like, well, yeah, it got you 3 victory points, but doesn't the 3 KOs also just win you the game? So I agree. I think the reasonable case for this is to say it will get me 1 victory point. Is that worth it? Is it worth spending 4 power to get on average 1 victory point? That's not as good as Usurp the Throne, but maybe it's good enough.
I think the power expenditure seems fine to me. And then in the world of the banned and restricted announcement, this might end up making more rosters. It's hard for me to know right now whether this tactic makes a roster slot for me. I definitely think it'll be used. I think it'll be used effective by certain people. Like I said, there's obviously a synergy with Killmonger. I think you might be able to do it with a cute Black Order list, because there's a lot of times in the power phase you can go, okay, Corvus is picking up 2 people. Blood Red and Personal, that seems fine. And Punisher has, you know, he fills a role for them as like a backline attacker that they don't really have.
Yep. Just a cheap character to hit on back objectives. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I think it'll get used. I don't think it's as powerful as Usurp the Throne, but I do think it's a very good card.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Very good. I think it's a good card. Let's go with that. I'm removing my very, I'm not going to edit it out. I'm just removing it. So it's just a good card.
Yeah. I'm thinking, do you remember when we looked at TTS rosters and we looked at characters and how often they were included with their affiliated card or their associated card? For me, this isn't like Usurp the Throne that was included most of the time. For me, this is something that is maybe 50-50 with Punisher. Because Punisher is unaffiliated, I think there'll be a lot of times where people are taking him for his card. And similarly, I think there'll be times where people are taking him on his own merits and they're leaving the card at home.
Yeah, I think I can get behind that.
Yeah. One last thing I wanted to mention, just to counter one of your points, maybe. You said that you thought other effects that give you victory points for dazing and KOing have synergy with this card. Do they? Because, like, they all want to do the same thing, but they don't actually help each other to do it, right? They don't make it easier to KO characters. So, like, for example, 1-2 Punch has synergy with this card, because I'm more likely to get a KO if I play 1-2 Punch. But I don't know that stacking every effect that helps you when you've dazed or KO'd a character is actually the way to go to synergize with this.
No, that's a great point, and I guess I can clarify, right? I mean, Usurp the Throne does have synergies, obviously, with helping you KO or daze a character, that being the big one. The other ones in my mind, like, so we can talk about Three Widow, right? If you're going to eventually use Blood Red and Personal, you're going to daze a character somewhere along the way. And what I was thinking is, like, if I'm going to be focused on KOing characters, I'm going to be focused on grinding you down a little bit more, then this might fit the general theme of a list, like what we traditionally view as a Black Order list, right? Which is a little more grindy in that regard. But you're right. Thanos being able to give you an additional VP and Blood Red and Personal being able to give you an additional VP doesn't actually help you daze MODOK or KO MODOK, right? You still have to get yourself over that hump in order to deliver the damage. So I guess that's a good point. Synergy maybe isn't the right word. I guess they're, I want to say ubiquitous, but that's the wrong word. They're relatives, neighbors. They have similar effects, right? They don't necessarily help you achieve the same thing.
Yeah, they're rewarding you for doing the same thing. So they might both be found in a list that wants to do that thing. Like, I think if we went back and dojoed your TTS list, I would probably make a strong case for maybe you want Punisher in this card as part of your roster.
Yeah, and it would be... the problem is, how do we fit him in an Avenger shell? But I would listen to the argument, at least, and I understand where it's coming from, and I think that kind of thinking is where Blood Red and Personal comes in for me. So I guess if your team is already focused on punching people till they go away, Blood Red and Personal is a good way to try to help you not lose on scenario. Well, we can talk about this, right?
Because that tone of voice.
there's two ways that you can build a punchy team, right? Where, okay, we're going to get behind in the early scenario, right? And then we're either going to KO your opponent, which is very difficult, or we're going to hopefully kind of come back in the latter rounds, right? And be able to win and eke out a win there, right? And if you're going for the eke out way, then Blood Red and Personal can kind of help you get there. If you're just going for KOs, then, like Pat said, just take the 3 KOs and don't worry about your VPs.
Yep. Yep. For sure. Okay, that's enough on this card. Really interesting one. Glad we discussed it. But let's move on to the others. So the next card in this pack is Heavy Ordnance. This card gets bonus marks in my book for having awesome artwork of Iron Man and War Machine kicking ass. The card itself is unaffiliated, active. Any character can spend 2 power during its activation to play this card. The character may use the attack listed above once this activation. So just to be clear, this is one of those cards that's giving you an attack, but you have to spend one of your actions to use the attack. The attack can only have dice added to it from crit results, and this character cannot modify its attack dice during this attack. Additionally, this attack has the following special rule. Explosive. Before damage is dealt, other enemy characters within 2 of the target suffer 1 damage, and the attack itself is physical, explosive barrage, range 4, 6 dice for 0 power. So, I said a lot there, but basically, you're spending 2 power in a tactics card to do a range 4, 6 dice attack that always explodes, so guarantees damage on enemies within 2 of the target. What do you think?
I think it's fine. I think if you did want to do what we said, maybe you shouldn't, and build a roster around Warzone or flat damage, it's interesting for the guaranteed explosion. It's definitely not a card that I immediately see fitting into my 8 anywhere. I do think it's cool that it gives us just an unaffiliated, like a true unaffiliated attack card. I really struggle to see where I'm willing to spend a tactics card and 2 power for the ability to make an attack. That is, generally speaking, kind of underwhelming.
It's pretty mediocre, isn't it? It's a little bit weird to me that this card has these extra rules that don't let you combo it with different effects, right? That you kind of are limited to not being able to add more dice, not being able to manipulate dice so much. But I think the card is okay. Maybe there's some sort of team composition where you have a lot of explosive or other multi-target attacks. And maybe there's something to that, because I think one of the problems with doing area of effect damage like explosive is generally you don't want to do small amounts of damage to multiple characters because it just powers them up. And you would rather be focusing your damage to get dazes and KOs, right? But maybe this card can complement other characters with similar abilities, and you can actually get enough reliable damage on multiple targets that you can expect to daze or KO multiple targets.
Yeah, I 2 power and attack this card is just steep for me, right? Like a 4-6-0, it's not a builder, right? A 4-6-2, like that would be an okay spender. Like we wouldn't be excited about it, right? And for that to happen and cost you a tactic slot and not allow you to modify things, this is, there's a lot of words on that card, but
yeah, if you compare
it to Iron Man's really cool. Gorgeous card.
It's super cool. If you compare it to Iron Man's Rocket Barrage, right? That is a 2-cost 5-5 physical attack with wild explosive. These two attacks are very similar. Iron Man's Rocket Barrage is nothing to write home about. And if I said, hey, do you want a tactics card that lets you do Iron Man's Rocket Barrage once a game? I don't think many people are going to take that.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. But the next card in the box is Extreme Conditioning, which has another gorgeous piece of art on it, right? Unaffiliated reactive. When a character begins a move action during its activation, it may spend 2 power to play this card. If the character advances, it may use the long movement tool during this movement. Pat, what do you think of Extreme Conditioning?
I really like it. I think it is a very funny card because, if I'm not wrong, that is Spider-Man under the washing machine and TV having to do the push-ups under the supervision of Taskmaster. And I feel bad for poor Spidey because he's already a long mover. So he's getting nothing from this workout session.
I don't know why push-ups help you move farther. I guess if you're a wall crawler, it helps, right?
But yeah, maybe this is why he's a long mover, because of all these workouts. But I think the card is interesting. I really like cards that let you move better, so to say. And having a set L movement obviously means it's way better for those short move characters. And moves in general are better when you have bigger bases. So it's really interesting on characters like Hulk, MODOK, Black Dwarf, who are those 65 mil bases with short movement. They're going to get a lot out of this.
Yeah, the other ones that kind of immediately come to mind are Kingpin, who we'll talk about in future episodes, and Venom, right? Venom would love a long move with Webcrawler. So I really like this card, actually. I think it would probably make my 8. I don't know how often it would make my 5. It would be very map crisis dependent for me. But I think you can definitely surprise people with like a long moving MODOK all of a sudden, right?
Yeah, I think one thing to mention is the 2 power cost is really interesting, because it certainly doesn't break the bank. But it does prohibit you from using it on turn 1 unless you've got a plan. And of course, we love our turn 1 plans.
We do.
Yeah, and I think this is one of those cards that is crying out to have a specific plan in mind when you're taking it. Because generally speaking, for these slow characters who only get to long move once, that long move is going to be at its best early in the game, right? You want to close the gap to your target, and then you want to start beating them up. And I think that this card is going to be very, very good if you pair it with things like advanced R&D and really surprise people by doing something like long move Black Dwarf immediately gets to the central objective. He then gets his 6 dice attack on the poor sucker that was contesting it, gets his power and interacts with it, right? Something like that could be really, really good. But you need to have that plan in mind before the game is starting.
So I went another route. So we like Extreme Conditioning with MODOK, right?
Yes.
And we like Aim Lackeys, right?
Right.
So Aim Lackeys just gives you a free additional move action. So if you are power rich, right, and definitely not the turn 1 play, but around 2 or 3, you could set up a free long move on Venom or someone else. right? And then they still have both their normal actions. So I kind of like the duality there, right? I'm probably already taking aim lackeys if I'm running MODOK, right? I don't mind extreme conditioning because I could extreme condition MODOK. And if I have another character can take it well, I kind of like it there. So I like the card. I think it won't be like a debilitating combo because like it won't immediately lead to your demise, but I think it can open some stuff up either on early rounds, like what Pat said, or mid rounds to get people really where you weren't expecting them to be. So I like the card. I really like that it's an unaffiliated card.
Yeah, me too. I think as a cheap mobility enhancer, it's going to see some play. It's going to be good in some lists with some characters.
Yeah, and there's a lot of characters, like Pat said, not to be a complete echo chamber, but like Black Dwarf in particular, like if he was just a little bit faster, right, he'd be phenomenal. And helping mm-hmm. them get up the table is huge.
Yeah, it's really good. Cool. So that's the box, right? We've got these two characters. We've got these three cards. Overall, TT, what do you think of this box?
I really like it. Happy to have pre-ordered it at my local game store. I'm going to be excited to pick them up. I'm actually really excited about painting Taskmaster. I'm a little jealous right now. but I really like it. I think another Rogue Agent is a welcome addition. I think Punisher's really cool. I know he's a huge fan favorite. I like that there are two unaffiliated cards that I think we're going to be adding back into the pool, the wide open pool after the Band of Restricted announcement. And I can't wait to see what people are coming up with. And Patreons, you can stay tuned for after the credit scene where we're going to dive in a little bit more about what Taskmaster's Rogue Agent really looks like and how that develops for things. If you're not a Patreon, you can check us out at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. If you're in a place to support us financially, you can check it out. We have two different tiers. Each tier gets the bonus episode called the After the Credit Scene every week. So if you want to hear more Pat and I's ramblings about MCP, be sure to check out the Patreon. Once again, patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. All right. Well, for everyone else, we want to thank you all so much for listening. I do want to congratulate Pat, Mark, and Nathan, who are patrons who made it out of the top 16, made it into the top 16 for the Tabletop Simulator League. I didn't see any other patrons, but people use weird names. If I missed one of you, I'm so sorry. Once again, congrats to the three of you. Pat, obviously, will be checking in. Want to wish you all good luck along the way. For everyone else, till next time, everyone, cheers. Happy gaming.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.